He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and we are interrupted, as usual, by the antagonizing, galling bluster of one LeBron James. In his latest attention grab in a recent torrent of arrogance, James now says that winning one championship in Cleveland, despite losing, what, six other NBA finals, makes him the greatest player of all time. He actually uttered this nonsense on his eight-part documentary series on some streaming vehicle on ESPN, the official network of LeBron James.
But that one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
For so many reasons.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when y'all, everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years of everything in sports going on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time. You know, everybody was just talking how they were the greatest team of all time. Like, it was the greatest team to ever assemble. And for us to come back, you know, the way we came back in that fashion, I was like, you did something special. That's probably one of the only times in my career I felt like, oh, like you did something special. I haven't had really had time to really like sit back and think, but that was a moment.
Crazy. Is this man on drugs? Let me make this quick. LeBron failed twice in Miami after declaring he would win not one, not two, not three, not four, not five NBA titles. He choked in the finals in 2011 against Dallas. He has not maximized the talent around him throughout his career. The jury is out on how much better he has made the likes of Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball with the Lakers. He has quit on teams in the playoffs, including the Cavs in 2010. He chased Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, hit the shot over Steph Curry that won that lone championship with the Cavs, straight out of Cleveland. No other superstar wants to play with James. Paul George didn't come. Kawhi Leonard isn't coming. Kevin Durant doesn't want to come. But LeBron just brazenly utters that he's the greatest, knowing that people like me will react, which basically is the definition of fake news. So LeBron, the perfect athlete in the fake news era. This isn't really about the fact, and again, fact, that Michael Jordan is indeed the greatest of all time, that his greatness was unparalleled on the court in the form of six titles and six finals MVP awards in six tries, by the way, 666, not the sign of the devil, the sign of Michael, and that Jordan made the most, the very most, of the talent around him, turning Scottie Pippen into a Hall of Famer, keeping Dennis Rodman out of the gutter, and making very valuable cogs out of so many role players. This is about LeBron just saying it, forgetting that the Cavs would not have won that year either had Draymond Green not been suspended for clawing at LeBron's crotch. At this point, LeBron just does and says as he pleases, showing up for a home game the other night with a glass of red wine as he nurses his groin injury. Then only a day after NBA Commissioner Adam Silver sent a memo to all 30 teams warning them of tampering consequences, this after LeBron's stated wish to acquire Anthony Davis, James responds by tweeting out a Leonard highlight with the word nasty. Does that constitute tampering? Doesn't matter because Silver doesn't have the balls to call out his money train. No way. LeBron, especially in the last month, has been screwing around with the world, having called NFL owners racists and having apologized for tweeting and singing a rap lyric about a Jewish stereotype. This is his way of winning, I suppose. When he knows the clock is ticking on his career, he is 34 now. He knows the Lakers might not win a playoff series this season. He knows he has only 3 years to win a title. And he knows that probably no superstar is coming to play with him. I'm really getting sick of LeBron James. It really comes down to Anthony Davis wanting to be here, or maybe the Celtics make the better deal with the New Orleans Pelicans for Davis. LeBron is helpless. So my theory is this man is simply trying to dominate digital media. Congratulations, LeBron. You are dominating digital media, social media. But there are no trophies for that. Remember the many doomsayers who declared the eventual demise of the National Football League? Well, they are very quiet today. Cricket quiet. I know this league still has existential issues, primarily the life and death dangers of brain trauma, but Roger Goodell and the owners are enjoying a bounce-back season that very few people were forecasting amid the various crises of recent years. We have seen breakout stars fueling huge offenses, such as Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, Mahomes throwing for 50 touchdowns and 5,000-plus yards. Nice, round, historic numbers that will bring him the league MVP trophy. Aren't you just loving his voice, which Chiefs coach Andy Reid jokingly describes as froggish, but it sure as hell sounds angelic to me and the rest of us. The man-child is so humble, Mahomes doesn't even agree that he should be the MVP. He thinks the entire team should get the award.
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, when you're in the moment, you're not really thinking about it, like you said. But it's a credit to my teammates. I mean, the offense line kept me upright all season long. Guys were making plays on short passes that were scoring touchdowns, and it's just a combination of all that with Coach Reed calling these great plays.
Did you make it a point to go get the ball after DeMarcus did his little celebration?
I grabbed that one, and I grabbed Tyreek's just because, I mean, they're special. I mean, to do those things in this league, I mean, it doesn't happen very often, and so I'll definitely keep that one. But hopefully I can get a few more as my this season ends and then my career at the end of my career.
We've also seen inspirational stories such as the return of Saint Nick Foles, the ultimate team first, no ego savior in Philadelphia. We have seen more close games than ever feeding into America's new legal gambling phase. And was there any better drama than the Steelers and their fans having won their game over Cincinnati, hanging out to watch the Heinz Field big screen and rooting for the Browns, the Cleveland Browns, their previously putrid rivals, to beat the Ravens, which did not happen, of course, when Baker Mayfield threw his late pick, keeping the Steelers out of the playoffs and really doing Pittsburgh a favor, putting that team out of its misery. We have seen TV ratings spikes. We've seen increased ad revenues in the NFL. We have seen safety measures to protect quarterbacks and curtail targeting. And now, looking ahead, we have a postseason where any number of teams could win the Super Bowl. The balanced Saints would be my slight favorite to win it all. They have never lost in the postseason at home under Sean Payton. Kansas City would be my AFC favorite, but ever so slightly, as Mahomes sometimes has to do it with a very problematic defense. A more balanced team can beat Kansas City. You have that dominant defense in Chicago where the Bears could be dangerous if Mitchell Trubisky manages the game and avoids killer mistakes. And they're going to be at home this weekend against that miracle Eagles team in Foles, who has authored yet another legendary story in perseverance, but he also has a chest injury. Here was Matt Nagy, the coach of the year in Chicago, where they almost might want to call him Doc Coach, a term of endearment usually reserved for Michael Keller Ditka. Can you believe I still remember his middle name?
Huge. I told the guys in the locker room at the end there, I said, boy, it looks good and feels good looking at these faces to end the regular season when we played Green Bay after that week one loss, and to see how far we've come as a family, nothing like it. And so now the real test starts. Everything's going to be a little faster. Everything's going to be a little quicker, a little louder. But I'm glad we're doing it at Soldier Field.
And, oh, we have the Dynasty Patriots. Remember them? Who are still coached by Belichick and quarterbacked by Brady. And they get an opening week bye. And they might just luck out in avoiding the bracket that has the Ravens and the Chargers, who have their AFC wildcard rematch in Baltimore this weekend. Would we be wrong to rule out the LA Rams, who have righted their wrongs, I think at least, and have a week off to get Todd Gurley healthy? Play the sound effect, football sound, same topic, football sound effect right here. The best game of Wild Card Weekend is Chargers at Ravens, with both LA teams qualifying for the playoffs in a town still catching on to this NFL thing. The coaching move of the season was John Harbaugh flipping the quarterback script and handing over the offense to Lamar Jackson, who is 6-1 as a starter, and he leads a running game that controls the clock, allowing a monster defense to win games. Jackson was the last quarterback taken in the draft, but he's the only one to reach the playoffs. And Harbaugh, whose job was in danger only a few weeks ago, lauded his team with the ultimate compliment.
And I think, you know, if you want to write a book about this season, probably no one would believe it, you know, but, and not just this season, go back a year, you know, the days are long, but the years are short. And just 1 year ago, we were in this exact same place, and our guys fought through all of that, every single situation, right to the end, and it wasn't going to be easy, I guess. It wasn't going to be something that was going to fall on our lap. Yeah, they were going to get a couple calls, and they were going to get right to the edge of field goal range, and they were going to get four cracks at it. And our defense was going to step up and make a play. Every single guy, and to me, it's the best. I told the guys last night, this is the best team I've ever been associated with. 34 years in coaching, and even back to Pee Wee. And I think when those guys, when they look back on it, when they're coaching, some of those guys are NFL head coaches or coaching their junior high Pee Wee teams. Look at this team, this bunch of guys, and remember what this is, because this is what a real team is. This is what a real team looks like. A bunch of guys that make a team, and that's why we are where we're at. And now that's an ending, and now is a new beginning. Every ending is a beginning, right? And now this is our beginning, and it starts with the playoffs. And we'll go to work, and we'll be ready to roll.
I know it's going to be tough to beat Phillip Rivers twice in 3 weeks, but if the Chargers wilted in the ferocious face of the Ravens' pass rush several days ago, what will be different on a cold day in Baltimore? I'm taking Ravens 20, Chargers 16. Andrew Luck is one of the feel-good stories of the season, finally overcoming years of injuries behind an offensive line expertly built by general manager Chris Ballard. What a job Ballard has done. And Luck, oh, this is perfect, grew up in Houston, where, lo and behold, a Colts team that has won 9 of 10 plays a Texans team pressured to end years of playoff underachievement under Bill O'Brien. My heart says Indy, but my head says Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt. Texans 26, Colts 20. The Eagles completing that inspirational run to the playoffs only to lose Foles to sore ribs. He's going to play, but that injury obviously will be a detriment against Khalil Mack and a Bears defense that requires a quarterback to be near perfect, which won't be possible amid the crazy din of Chicago loons who have not hosted a playoff game in eons. Here was Foles, forever a Philly folk hero.
You know, my plan is to get ready to roll. That's my plan. Obviously, we still have to look into a lot of different things tomorrow, but you know, it's unfortunate I couldn't finish the game today, but, you know, I'm ready. You know, I want to get this thing going. I want to wear that jersey, you know, one more time and hopefully more, but, you know, all we have guaranteed is, you know, this week. So, once again, just staying in the moment and taking care of what I got to take care of now.
And no, Carson Wentz is not coming out of that tunnel. By the way, Foles' injury left him four agonizing snaps short of a $1 million escalator bonus. I think the Eagles will be giving it to him anyway, and really they should be erecting a statue of this guy outside the link. Why are they letting him go? I know he's going to make more money somewhere else. Why are they letting him go? Watch what he does for another franchise, and watch Carson Wentz get hurt again. Bears, 24. Eagles, 17. And the Cowboys and the Seahawks, I say pick 'em, depending on which coach is better and which quarterback and offense are more efficient. So I'm taking Pete Carroll, who has reminded the world of his coaching chops in a very quick remake of the Seahawks. And I'll take Russell Wilson, who doesn't make mistakes, and he controls the league's leading ground attack. Yep, Seattle. I've got Seahawks 19, Cowboys 17. Notice how all four are one-score predictions. That's why people are loving the NFL again. Once the no-fun league, it's now the never-flat league. Always fun from the offenses to the close finishes to the Mahomes, Foles, Drew Brees storylines to the end zone selfie celebrations. Smile, Roger Goodell. Your league is back. But part of that league is the inevitable removal of head coaches. And among those out at long last is Marvin Lewis, who never won a playoff game in Cincinnati, yet somehow kept his job for 16 seasons, the longest NFL tenure ever for a coach without a single postseason victory. As I said last week, the league has a sensitive, if not volatile, issue right now, with Lewis among five black head coaches let go this season, joining Todd Bowles, Vance Joseph, Steve Wilks, and earlier, Hugh Jackson. It's difficult to satisfy the Rooney Rule, requiring NFL teams to interview ethnic minority candidates for head coaching and executive positions when so many minorities are moving on, with Reggie McKenzie ousted as Raiders GM and Ozzie Newsome retiring after a distinguished career in Baltimore. In all five coaching cases, you can't say each man wasn't given a fair shot to succeed. And with eight teams now looking for coaches after Adam Gase and Dirk Cutter were dismissed, there will be intense scrutiny on franchises to follow the Rooney Rule, even if the overall pool of coaching candidates, regardless of race, is very thin this year. One factor to watch closely, the two Harbaughs. John Harbaugh, who has done great work in pushing the Ravens to a division title, is coveted by more than one team and just might be available in a trade in a few weeks if he doesn't agree to a long-term deal with the Ravens. And brother Jim Harbaugh, who has disappointed greatly at Michigan, might be ready to return to the NFL if he's given a whopper contract and roster control. Remember, he was very divisive within the 49ers front office despite his success there. Here are the openings in order of job attractiveness. Browns are number one. Yes, the Browns with Josh McDaniels, Lincoln Riley, and deposed Packers coach Mike McCarthy on the list to coach Baker Mayfield, and a sudden influx of two-way talent for those Renaissance Browns. The Packers are number two with McDaniels and Brian Flores in the picture. That is if McDaniels doesn't stay in New England as Bill Belichick's eventual successor, along with surprise candidate Pat Fitzgerald, who has maximized a Northwestern program with academic restrictions and will never have a better shot at a good NFL job. Broncos come in three, with John Elway wanting the best available offensive mind. I say the Jets rank fourth here with McCarthy in the mix, although Mike might take 2019 off, and there are questions about his game management in Green Bay, the Aaron Rodgers fiasco. The Dolphins are at five. They have had how many coaches in recent years? Four? And here is where I think owner Stephen Ross reaches out to the Harbaughs and ignores completely the phone calls of Rex Ryan, who is lobbying for the job. Rex, stay in Bristol at ESPN. the Cardinals down there at 6, and while they do have Josh Rosen and the upcoming number one pick in the draft, the talent is thin there, and general manager Steve Keim might be on his way out, so who would want the job? Buccaneers way down there, number 7. Who wants the hassle of making something out of Jameis Winston, who somehow remains the franchise quarterback? And finally, 8th and last, the Bengals, a franchise stuck in the last century with Mike Brown running the show. Who on earth would want to coach for Mike Brown? Mike Tomlin gets to stay in Pittsburgh, a byproduct of a stubborn owner, Art Rooney II, who takes pride in having only 3 head coaches in a half century in Pittsburgh, despite Tomlin's mistakes in game management and locker room discipline. And the Jaguars are keeping Doug Marrone despite a disciplinary breakdown one season after a near Super Bowl berth. It might be time for Stanford's David Shaw, like Fitzgerald, having maximized a program at an elite academic institution, to command an enormous NFL contract. And Kansas City offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy might get a shot following that Matt Nagy path, if you will. Saints assistant Dan Campbell, Rams quarterback coach Zach Taylor. You'll be hearing all sorts of names, but really now I'm not sure there are 8 good candidates, though many of these jobs aren't worthy of good candidates. The easy, simplistic view is to bog down in the monotony of Alabama Clemson 4 to be played next Monday night in the Bay Area, thousands of miles from both campuses with not a southern draw in earshot. Why not more parity in college football, we could ask? And why not scholarship limits to create that parity? And why not an 8-team playoff to make the tournament more difficult for these 2 behemoths? Or I guess we can maybe try to appreciate the rarity of it all, these 2 colossal programs that have a stranglehold on college football as the 2 heavyweight champs of their era. Cynical as we have a right to be about collegiate sports, there is no evidence either program cheats to recruit elite talent nationwide. No, it appears the players do come to them, realizing Tuscaloosa and rural South Carolina are the very best pipelines to the NFL. And Alabama's Nick Saban, like him or not, and those screaming fits of his and the methodical victory over Oklahoma will not endear him to anybody. He has created a machine like few other coaches in the history of sports. You have to give it to him on any level, with a record 7th national title awaiting him. One of Saban's traits that I've admired is to compartmentalize each season as its own. He has done that this year, although in my mind, all of this seems to be just meshing together, this brilliant run of dominance.
Nick, there are coaches in the nation that will say how hard it is to get to a national championship game. Does it feel like 4 straight to you?
Well, I'm always looking ahead, and I'm kind of looking ahead for this one. And I'm looking that way because I think we owe it to our team. You know, I thank these guys all the time for the great hard work that they do, the way they represent the university, themselves, their family. I'm really proud of them for that. But every thank you has an IOU, and I owe you them my very best. So do all of our coaches, and that's how we kind of approach it. And it's the next game, and I really think too much about what's happened in the past, just the challenges of, you know, be where your feet are and what's happening right now. And I'm sure Clemson will be a tremendous challenge for our team.
And one of Nick's sins is to lose his temper, as he did in throwing and breaking yet another headset, this on a night when he was throwing oranges into the stands in Miami after the victory. Nick, please explain your temper.
And for Coach Saban, you got to throw some oranges, but you also threw a headset tonight. The highs and the lows of emotions right there.
Yeah, it was more fun throwing the oranges. I can tell you a story about that. You know, my son was young and playing like junior high basketball. He got mad in a game, and I gave him a lecture, he and Kristen both, about not showing their emotions, keeping their cool. And their response to me was, "And how many headsets have you broken?"
Then there's Dabo Sweeney, good old boy, a native son of Alabama, former Crimson Tide player, and he's the one coach who has bested the Master Saban in a college football playoff national title game. And with two future NFL quarterbacking stars dueling in Santa Clara, of all places, the poise and precision of Tua Tagovailoa and the deep arm and magnetic presence of true freshman Trevor Lawrence, you are looking at a game that really should rock and roll to the very end, just like their two meetings in this title round the first two times around. Remember, we've only had this for a few years, the college football playoff, and those first two games, Alabama-Clemson, were classics. Is this one, number four, merely the Warriors versus LeBron, where Alabama takes control with its third title in four tries? Or is this where Clemson strikes back when the Cavaliers never did get their second one? If Clemson does win, and I say no, they will do so with Trevor Lawrence in that deep passing game, those gifted receivers. They burned a very unworthy, told you, Notre Dame team, but you won't have such mismatches against a Saban defense. Clemson will try to pound the football on the ground with Travis Etienne, which will be ATM in the NFL for him, while Alabama will depend on the reliable airstrikes of Tagovailoa, who, by the way, says he is still dealing with his surgically fixed ankle, but that doesn't matter because he is throwing darts regardless of the ankle. Maybe he's not moving around quite as well, but he has the ball control of that running back committee. Saban just reloads like nobody I've ever seen. He fits the mold of each running back, 1 through 5, each receiver, 1 through 4. Here was Tua, who says he felt discomfort on that near flawless night. If he doesn't feel discomfort this coming Monday night, will he be flawless? I think anything's possible with this guy, though it didn't stop Nick from screaming at him.
I think preparing this week has been really good. I can't say if I felt a lot better out there or if I was the same. But, you know, I think we're continuing to make progress, you know, with getting better, going to rehab treatment. 24-hour treatment protocol is still on the line for us now. You know, we're just trying to get better, trying to prepare for Clemson this upcoming week.
And here was his counterpart, Lawrence, who seemed to issue an indirect guarantee of sorts when talking to ESPN.
Finally, a moment ago, you looked up and you said, "Where's the confetti? Why?"
Well, I thought you won this one. There's a confetti. It's a bowl game, so I didn't know, but we'll have to wait till next week. So.
And did you see how Alabama worked Jalen Hurts, the greatest backup quarterback in college football history, into that Oklahoma game? A throw here, a rush here, even lining him up at receiver. Mighty as Clemson's defensive line is, the Tide rolls out way too many weapons. Tua, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy in the passing game, Josh Jacobs, Damian Harris, and the Bay Area product Najee Harris in the backfield for Clemson to keep up. But if you can get past the same old here, this game should be a fun night, certainly more fun than those two semifinal games. Clemson's Christian Wilkins thinks people should watch, and he says they will watch, even though it is the same old, same old.
It's one of those things you look back on. You know, you never really can appreciate a rivalry or understand the magnitude of a rivalry until, you know, it's years down the line. Or, like, you look back and you're like, oh. And, I mean, right now they're up, you know, 2-1 against us. So it's not, I mean, they have a, you know, a good lead on us. And so it's not really much of a rivalry. I mean, they beat us twice.
Do you, you're going to hear this a lot, too. Do you think this is good for college football to have this kind of matchup 4 years in a row?
I don't know. I really don't know. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about the Cavs, Warriors every year in the NBA. I really don't know. Or, like, I know people have mixed feelings about it. I mean, regardless, if you see the same two teams in it, you might say, oh, I'm not watching it, but you end up watching it anyway.
And does any reasonable person still think Kyler Murray should be moving on to a baseball career? It's hard to believe Saturday was his final football game, brilliant and persistent as Murray was in defeat with his arm and his feet. And as I've said, with the way quarterbacking has changed in the NFL with size no longer necessarily a detriment, it is easy to picture Murray, even at 5'10", excelling on the next level a la Baker Mayfield. All Murray has to do is say, "I'm playing football, guys," and he will go in the first round, where Baltimore's Jackson cashed in a higher guarantee as the 32nd and last pick, $5.5 million, than Murray will make if he chooses to take the $4.4 million bonus and play with the Oakland A's. Nobody, not even Murray himself, thought he would take college football by storm and win the Heisman Trophy. If he truly loves baseball, and I'm not so sure of that, the A's will start him in Class A ball, but baseball is a crapshoot. And I remind you, we've seen a lot of great athletes try baseball. They can't hit the curveball. They don't like playing 162 games. They wilt in the middle of the summer. And Murray did strike out in 35% of his at-bats at Oklahoma. This is no sure bet. And forget about this Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders two-way career stuff. The A's don't want him playing in the NFL. And an NFL franchise in this day and age rightfully doesn't want its starting quarterback moonlighting in baseball. The A's have paid him only $1.5 million of that bonus so far, and if he doesn't want to report in March, he simply gives it back. Or if he commits to baseball, he'll get the remaining $3.16 million this spring. So I think it's very simple for him to go to Scott Boras and say, "I'm playing football," and Boras, who's simply interested in the best deal, knows the better deal is in the NFL now that Murray has shown himself to be a number one pick. In fact, with the upcoming quarterbacking class weak without Justin Herbert, who is staying at Oregon, Murray could be the second quarterback picked after Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins, or maybe the first quarterback picked. He's going to reject the opportunity to be an instant NFL star like Mayfield to play for the Beloit Snappers or the Stockton Ports? Come on. Here was Murray before the Orange Bowl loss, sounding confident he could thrive in the NFL. This does not sound like a man who is necessarily headed straight to baseball.
I've always felt like I could play in the NFL. I mean, I'm a confident guy. You know, there's not a lot of short quarterbacks in the league, but you know, I think there's more guys paving the way for, you know, the transition of, you know, not really caring how big you are, how tall you are. But for me, yeah, I mean, I've played this game my whole life, and I've always felt like I could do it. So I always felt like it might be, honestly. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, nobody expected any of this, but me, the people that are closest to me, people that have always known, people who have always watched me play, whether it was football, baseball, nobody expected it. So now it's kind of like, you know, what do you do? But for me, I'm just taking it one day at a time and just doing what I've always done.
In many cases, I would urge a player to protect his brain and play baseball. In Murray's case, he should play in the NFL and thrive competitively and financially. Baseball should be his fallback sport. By the way, the NFL draft order is out with Arizona 1, San Francisco 2, Jets 3, Raiders 4, Buccaneers 5. None of those teams will be drafting a quarterback with those picks. You could see some teams trading up maybe, but if not, and they keep the picks, who's at number 6? The New York Giants. Can you imagine Murray being phased in to replace an aging Eli Manning as the Chiefs did with Mahomes and Alex Smith? Can you imagine Saquon Barkley in the backfield, Odell Beckham Jr. at wideout, and Murray as your quarterback? Oh my God, this would be more entertaining than the Golden State Warriors in their prime. They could revolutionize offensive football the way Kansas City has. I mean, don't put that past the Giants. They need a pickup in that city. They've got talent. Eli's done. Why not give that a try? What are you scared of? Well, what are you scared of there? Don't be scared. If you, Mariotti aside, if you have the stones to keep employing Odell Beckham Jr., who hangs out with hookers and has drugs in his room and kind of is way out there, why wouldn't you gamble on Kyler Murray because he's 5'10"? I'm just putting it out there. And who's at number seven, Jacksonville, which has no quarterback, needs a spark after the big boss Tom Coughlin lashed out in a release, very unusual, at Leonard Fournette and T.J. Yeldon, saying both were, quote, disrespectful and selfish on the sideline Sunday. They were in civvies, didn't seem to care. Talk about setting a tone for 2019. But again, I keep thinking of Murray's outstanding performance, the way he came back. I'm thinking if they had 10 more minutes in that game, Oklahoma might have won. And I'm thinking, dude, you want to play baseball? You want to play and ride buses in Wisconsin? No. And a final note to college football's powers that be. Can you please figure out how to maximize the magnitude of the semifinals? These games continue to be afterthoughts because of scheduling. In this case, the Saturday after Christmas, not the most convenient time for big ratings, just as New Year's Eve never was either. Come on, guys, either put these games on New Year's Day exclusively or push them back before Christmas when you don't have a four-week lull period after the conference title games. This eight-team playoff format is gaining momentum, and it seems inevitable despite so-called concerns, yeah, right, about player safety and the effect on the student-athlete's workload. The powers that be are slow playing us. They know they can't force it in. They have these other concerns, so they're playing with us. They think we're dumb. It'll be here, that eight-team playoff, by 2022, maybe. Remember, follow the money. But you're not going to see it for a few years. So for now, with every other bowl rendered meaningless and a lot of star players blowing off those other bowls to protect their NFL careers, how about making these games the New Year's Day fixtures and making them more relevant TV-wise than the Rose Bowl? Can you believe the Rose Bowl this year has a better TV time slot conducive to ratings on New Year's Day than those two semifinal games? That's ass backwards. Simple. In years the Rose Bowl is not hosting a national semifinal such as this year, move that game back to the December the 29th slot. Real easy. With all these billions being made, why do I have to do all the heavy thinking here? And as the Warriors try to slash through their jungle of issues, are they knowingly competing to have the most viral soundbite? Sure seems like it. Recently, we have heard Kevin Durant continuing to express frustration with his haters out there instead of ignoring them.
I've come to the conclusion that people hate the fact that I play for the Warriors, and people hate the fact that I'm so damn good at basketball. They don't like that combination. And so that brings out jealousy, envy, even if it's through comments or even if it's through, you know, slick comments through the media or people testing my manhood on TV. They just cannot stand when somebody like me is so successful and doing it a way that they didn't want me to do it.
Yeah.
So it's not my fault when I say something, you get in your feelings. Mm-hmm. It's that you got some underlying against me already. So no matter what I say or how I approach anything, it's going to be a problem if I don't agree with you because you just don't like me. You know what I'm saying? And that's just the facts. A lot of people want to say facts about me, but that's the facts. Like, you don't like that I play for the Warriors and you don't like that I'm so fucking good at basketball. Mm-hmm. And you put those two together and you get nothing but magic. And it's just like, it's just basketball nirvana and people don't like that. So they just jealous of what I got.
Are you?
And I don't mind calling you out on your bullshit.
Katie, why do you read trash such as Barstool Sports? That's your problem to begin with. You're smarter than all these people. Stop reading this garbage. We've also heard Draymond Green dare defenders to keep backing off him as he keeps missing shots in bunches.
Don't worry about my defender. My defender gonna have to play. I'm not about to trip over something that happened in game 32-3. You know, these games are starting to become a lot more important. You know, as down the stretch in the playoffs. That's kind of when I play my best basketball anyway. My defender gonna have to play. So whatever action I'm in, I'm gonna start lighting their ass up. So, you know. And that don't just mean scoring, by the way. I ain't really been doing me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't been playmaking like I can. I ain't been, you know, scoring when I got the opportunity. I ain't been rebounding like I can. I ain't been defending. Like, I just haven't been myself. You know, so I think everybody's kind of looking at the scoring or whatnot. I don't really look at that. You know, like, yeah, I got to be more aggressive on the offensive end, but I just got to be me all around. I haven't really been that. And so, you know, everybody judging, like, oh, he's not shooting well. You know, I think one of my best games of my career was when I, you know, when the blow-up happened at OKC, and I had 1 point and 17 rebounds and 16 assists and something like that. That was, like, the best game, like, one of the best games of my career. I don't need to score to completely annihilate a defense. So, you know, I think most people kind of think, oh, like, he's saying he's going to shoot better. You know, shots going to fall when they fall. But I've completely destroyed defenses not shooting the ball. So I just got to be that person. And when I'm that person, my shots will fall. That's how I look at it.
And we've heard Klay Thompson fire back at the media when asked about his shooting slump.
I don't think anyone's harder on themselves than you are when your shot is not where you want it to be.
Is
there a mental side to it?
No, I'm not hard on myself at all, to be honest. I care, but I don't lose sleep over it.
No, I understand what you mean. I know you're very competitive, and I know you want to be there for your team. And if your shot's not quite where you want it to be...
Well, I'm there for our team. We're in first place.
That's true.
Every single night.
You're an excellent defender as well.
There every single night.
What would you like to see come through on your shot a little bit more?
I don't know. More makes. Just make the shots more. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. How old do the questions about the shooting slump get?
I don't care. I don't think it's a shooting slump. Really don't. So, no. Especially, like I said, I don't care. Yeah.
What do you think it is? It's not a slump.
I don't know. What do you think it is? Only in first place?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Steph also said that sometimes, see, we must stay in his ear, meaning he has to want to keep communicating with you. Do you get a lot of people talking to you about your shot at all?
No. What is someone going to tell me about my jump shot that I can't fix at this point? Unless it's Reggie Miller or Ray Allen, I don't know who I'm supposed to listen to. Larry Bird? Steve Kerr, I'll listen to Steve. Steve shot 45%. But other than that, it's like, I've done this job for a long enough time. I know what I need to do.
And then we saw a frustrated Andre Iguodala ejected. This was viral when he tossed the ball 20 rows into the stands in Portland, an act that the refs deemed hostile. This is one riled up team, as we've seen in Green's shakedown of Durant. Yet, I've also seen signs of the Warriors in the past feeding off such drama and winning titles. As I said last week, there are a lot of cracks in this team, and who knows if they're going to get it done. There seems to be a lot more potential for a breakdown than a championship. But I am pleased to report that Thompson, after ending his slump in that Portland victory, actually looked at his shooting hand and said, "I missed you." You don't have to love the Warriors, but you do have to like how they occupy our attention spans. They never cease to be fascinating. And if 2018 will be remembered as the year the Supreme Court legalized sports gambling in America, it also whipped open the gates to wagering stupidity out there. Bettors, for some reason, flocked to sports books and placed big money on Notre Dame, a 12.5-point underdog, not only to cover the spread against Clemson, but to win the game outright. Oops! Despite attempts to mesh tradition with modern financial realities, such as hosting a Garth Brooks concert in the fabled campus stadium, Notre Dame is doomed to big game failures. The Irish have flopped twice now in the college football playoff because they simply don't have the talent and the coaching to stay with Alabama and Clemson, yet they can stumble into the Final Four because of favorable schedules as an independent and the lack of a conference title game. Kind of serves some of their fans right that a bald eagle meant to fly across the stadium during pregame festivities in Arlington actually landed on one of them and scared the crap out of them. Why the bettors couldn't see what I could see about Notre Dame, I have no idea, but I remind you of the estimated 10 million problem gamblers in America, most of whom lose their asses on foolish whims. I also remind you that mainstream sports media are trying to exploit the gambling sickness with NBC Sports, the latest to launch daily programming serving gamblers. Never mind that most of us still watch sports for the competition and the theater and the purity. I don't gamble on sports. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, LeBron James has declared himself the greatest player of all time. Now, I have watched the entirety of his career and the entirety of Michael Jordan's career. This is unequivocally fake news on the part of LeBron. Do you agree?
Well, Jay, as we've been over, gosh, a million times, because of LeBron always putting us in this situation, I'm a Jordan kid. I grew up singing I Want to Be Like Mike. There'll never be anything like Michael Jordan. And we watch, I mean, just look at this past weekend. We watch college football games, and you see the Jordan logo. Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time, not simply because of what he did, 6 for 6, as you like to point out, 6 MVPs, blah, 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 blah. But he transcended the game. He gave way to Tiger Woods. He gave way to the modern-day NBA and all these superstars. LeBron James may end up being the greatest of all time by the numbers. He probably will. But nobody ever had to say Michael Jordan was the greatest. It was just understood. Tiger Woods was called the greatest by many before he even reached 25 years old. And then, obviously, his personal life and all that got in the way of him reaching the numbers. But he may still one day. It doesn't really matter. People will put him up there. LeBron literally has to use social media and all these shows he has now and his platforms to tell everybody he's the greatest. Enough. It's exhausting is what it really is. It's exhausting. And can you imagine Jordan and Tiger in the beginning of his career if social media and the sports media existed like they do now? Oh, my God. But still, even if Jordan was playing in today's world, if you will, I don't think we'd ever hear Michael Jordan say, I'm the greatest. He would just go out and do it and show us why he's the greatest. LeBron needs to think about that, but he won't. He'll just continue and continue to do this nonsense.
Chris, this has been an entertaining NFL season. All of those critics have kind of gone away, and I think it's about to get better. Any number of teams could win it all. Who do you like at this point?
Jay, I think it's tough to beat the Saints out of the NFC. I don't think any team's going to do that. So I think Saints are the NFC in the Super Bowl. AFC is a little dicey. You see the Pats, yet again, they're in there. Yet again, they win the AFC East. I don't believe in the Chiefs all the way because of Andy Reid. And as somebody who was an Eagles fan for many years, I could actually say that. I'm going to go with the Chargers. Shocking as it may be, the LA Chargers of Carson from San Diego against the New Orleans Saints, Jay.
And Chris, should Kyler Murray, after that great performance Saturday night, go anywhere near a baseball field? I think his riches and fame are in the NFL, especially after watching him gash a Nick Saban defense in the second half when many would have quit.
I've never seen Kyler Murray actually play baseball. I've seen him play football, and he did have a nice second half comeback, even though Alabama still routed Oklahoma, and there was no chance Oklahoma was going to ever win that game. And on the broadcast, I believe they were saying that if he goes to baseball, he's going to start in single A. It seems like he has a better shot in the NFL to be a star. But so if I was him, I would definitely stick to the NFL, especially with the shortage of quarterbacks out there. I mean, 5 of the highest paid, what's the meme and stat going around on social media today? The top 5 paid quarterbacks aren't going to the playoffs. That should just tell you, you don't even have to make the playoffs, Kyler Murray. You're going to get paid like crazy.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Rick Pitino has been accused of much wrongdoing, but never of being anything but an excellent tactical coach. So it doesn't surprise me that he won his EuroLeague debut with a Greek team, but it does surprise me that he immediately compared the fans in Athens to those at Kentucky. Rick, wait until they're throwing coins at your head when you lose. As for another Hall of Fame coach, Larry Brown, I think it's time to cry uncle at age 78. Brown was fired by the Italian club Fiat Torino. They make Fiats in Torino, also known as Turin. I spent 4 weeks there once at an Olympics. By the way, Mariotti aside, a couple of things about Turin, Italy. One, they pee in the river. You don't wait to find a bathroom. You pee in the river. It's just standard the locals. I didn't. And two, I once went into what appeared to be a 14th century building with the most narrow passageways I've ever seen, with a couple of writers, including J.A. Adonde, and we squeezed our way into this place, and I swear to God, I was claustrophobic. I thought I was going to die. My arms were starting to tremble. We could not have gotten out of there. If there was a fire, there would have been 200 people dead. And then when we finally get in this room, wedge our way in, there's Bodie Miller passed out on the floor. True story. A Mariotti aside. Back to Larry Brown. He lost 19 of 24 games this season. He was booed by the home fans in his final loss. Not a way to end a career in which he was the only coach to win championships with an NBA and a college team. Detroit Pistons, Kansas. Did you know that? Serena Williams is about to get a crack at playing Roger Federer. That's right, but no, this is not a singles match between the greatest female and male tennis players of all time. They will meet in mixed doubles tomorrow at the Hopman Cup in Australia. Not aware of what that is. And while Federer will have to return Serena's powerful serve, and that will be worth watching, a mixed doubles match is still a mixed doubles match. They generally just kind of giggle a lot. And honestly, I've never heard of the other two players involved. But I do think Serena will give it her best shot trying to ace Roger Federer. And I do think she will, at least once. I'm surprised this doesn't happen more in sports. Dallas Stars CEO Jim Leitz blaming the team's sluggish start on his two highest paid players, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, calling them, and I'm quoting, bleeping horse bleep, unquote, and saying the feeling is shared by the team's owners. Said Leitz, quote, they're not good enough for me and they aren't good enough for the owner. Well, you paid them millions of dollars. Ben fired back at Leitz, interesting, by saying, I don't play for him, quote unquote. Well, yeah, he pays your salary. I think you do. But what the hell? In a town with Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban, at least Leitz got his NHL team a little bit of attention. And don't ever say we don't cover hockey on this podcast. The Tampa Bay Lightning are blowing away the rest of the NHL on a 129-point pace that would break the salary cap era record of the 2005-06 Detroit Red Wings. It's a good thing this is happening because the region's baseball team, the Tampa Bay Rays, was scorched by newcomer Tommy Pham, who ripped the lack of a fan base and said the team might have to relocate to survive. Tommy had the privilege of playing in St. Louis, sell out crowds, red everywhere. Tampa Bay, the antithesis, nobody's in the stands. The Rays owner, Stuart Sternberg, wants public money to help him build a new stadium in Tampa where the population is centered. Duh. You could draw from that city, which is a much bigger and younger city than old fart town St. Petersburg over here across the causeway. But Stuart wants Tampa to pay, and they're not paying. So he's thinking about where? Montreal, Charlotte, Chattanooga? Well, what's left? You're running out of cities. What a baseball tragedy that both franchises in Florida, the gateway to baseball's Latin American riches, are both dogs. And finally, in one of my favorite stories of 2018, Kyle Williams could have played a season or two more and pocketed more millions in the NFL. Instead, though still a very productive defensive tackle for the Buffalo Bills, he chose to retire so he can watch his children play t-ball and soccer in person instead of on FaceTime in some faraway hotel room. Kyle, that's your best defensive play ever. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life, and I'm wishing you all a happy 2019.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots and ruined your blind tie affair. The last one to know, the last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when I took his glass of champagne. And I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, but you'll never hear me complain. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. Big on social graces, think I'll slip on down to the oasis. So I've got friends in low places. I was wrong, I just don't belong. But then I've been there before. Everything's alright.